Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, whenever you're listening. This is the Fool's Folly Podcast.
My back's been playing up. This is great content.
But hashtag content.
I woke up yesterday and I had a really bad night's sleep, and I don't know what I've done. I've either done something in my sleep or I pulled a muscle. And yesterday it was really quite bad, to the point where my rational brain told me it was just muscular pain and it will go in a few days. But it got so bad at one point where it was actually breathing was painful, to the point where I went, oh no, maybe it's my kidneys.
Maybe
my kidneys are failing. And I spent a long time going, oh no, this is it. This is my kidneys are going. I was looking into the mirror going, am I going yellow? What's going on? And then I got really quite panicky, and I'd agreed to go and babysit for a friend of mine. And then thinking, oh God, I'm going to have to phone them up and go, I'm so sorry, I can't come.
My kidneys have failed.
I'm so sorry. And then I decided, oh no, it's fine. And then I got in the car. I could barely turn to reverse out of where I live, driving in pain to go to my friend's house. Still in the back of my mind thinking, got to be calm, but my kidneys might be failing. This is awful. In the back of my head also beginning to do, right, if something were to really badly happen, who do I leave what to?
Yeah, of course.
You're starting to do that. Get there, immediately go, after you've done the hellos, how are you? Any chance you've got any ibuprofen? Yeah, great. Whack two of those down, 20 minutes later, so no pain. Go, well, great, it's muscular.
Yeah.
No one's getting anything.
No one's.
Totally fine.
Yeah. No one's getting any of my stuff. I want to donate all my stuff to charity anyway. No, I don't like anyone. I have to give them anything, leave them anything in my will. So talk about making waves a bit more then, as that's kind of...
Oh, yes.
That's been and gone now, and that's, we were a couple of weeks removed from there.
Yeah, it was great. I was really lucky because I did a few days' work for them in the most tiniest capacity. I ended up getting, by sheer luck, I was given a team lanyard, which meant I got to go and see everything.
Everything for free.
Yeah, which was nice. And I was a bit, when I was told that, oh yeah, you'll get this thing, I was a bit like, oh, are you sure? Really? Because, you know, essentially, just an office boy for you. Yeah, it was great. I don't really know what else to say. I really liked, I pretty much liked everything I went to.
Yeah.
I thought it was a really strong programme.
Did you manage to catch near enough everything?
The only things I didn't catch due to... I didn't catch Hannah and Hannah.
But we'd seen that before.
But I'd seen that before. Yeah. So I didn't feel too bad about not seeing that, because I'd seen it before. And just because of scheduling or not, I didn't see the Lunar Tractors either. Yeah, but I saw everything else. I mean, my highlights were Bumper Blighton was really good. Really good.
Yeah.
Really enjoyed Bumper Blighton. And then my show of that weekend really caught me by surprise. It was a guy called Harry Baker doing a spoken word poetry show called I Am 10,000.
Was that Henry Mad?
No. Henry Mad had another show, which was also really good.
Oh,
but
right,
Harry
okay.
Baker had a show at the Tom Thumb.
Okay.
And I went, and I almost didn't go. Because self-admittedly, poetry, I understand that it's a beautiful medium. It doesn't always do it for me either. So I almost didn't go, but then I thought, oh yeah, no, I should go. And I went, and I realised I hadn't actually ever seen a show at the Tom Thumb from beginning to end, because even the things we had done...
We have done there, we've been in it, so we hadn't been out.
So I went and saw that, and that was great.
Yeah.
Really liked it, and I don't think this is a bad thing to say, I don't think. And also, I was really surprised that how many people there, like, it packed out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
I know it's a small venue and whatnot, but, you know.
Yeah. I don't think that's a bad thing to say, because it's a brand new fledgling
festival.
Yeah, it was a really
nice audience, and he was great.
Yeah.
He was fantastic. And what I loved about him was the specificity of his language was great. There wasn't a single word that was out of place. He was confident, he was assured, he was funny, he was likable, but he also, like, he knew his thing.
Yeah.
He knew his thing. He knew what he had to say. He knew what we were going to do here. Very little I'm in an R in. The complete opposite to what I do. So much I'm in an R in. But he was brilliant. I just really enjoyed it. And he was funny. To the point you go, you can't be a poet and be funny.
I know, you bastard.
You can't have two things.
Yeah, you can't have
one
both.
Thing.
Have one. Don't be greedy. Don't be so greedy.
Have one thing.
Yeah.
No, he was really good.
That's really nice. I saw that. Obviously, we managed to catch the showcase. We went to see that together.
Oh, the showcase. Yeah.
The showcase was fucking ace. Yeah. And that Afro Bangra.
That was my highlight.
I have not stopped thinking about
the weekend.
I have not stopped thinking about it.
All the joy.
So for those people, so we had a showcase of was it six different acts over in Olbers?
Yeah, they put this show.
Yeah, they put the showcase together and people, all sort of artists from all over Kent, and it was just amazing. And to close out the first half of the show was this band called. Or group, I should say. Band? Group?
A group?
Yeah, a group. Musicians and dancers called Afro Bangra. And it was a combination of Southern African, not South African, Southern African and Indian music.
Yeah.
And it was all combined together with the, like, each culture would kind of tie into the other one. It was just amazing. Just
joyful.
It was just brilliant.
The joy.
So good. It left me feeling so good.
I didn't know I needed it. We were saying this afterwards. I didn't know I needed that.
Yeah. Didn't know I needed that. Didn't know I wanted that.
Yeah.
But it was just as soon as it came outstanding.
On, you know, it's not even particularly music I listen to. No. Or whatnot, but it just came on and I went, you know. And, you know, kind of fittingly, because it's mental health week or month. I was feeling, I don't know why, over that weekend, my anxiety was playing up for some reason, and even on that day, it had been quite bad. And when my anxiety is particularly bad, I do struggle to do things like being at the theatre and whatnot. And it sometimes I'm like, oh, okay, and just, you know. But even though it's surrounded by people I actually know,
yeah.
But then they come on and that just wet because it was just so joyful. It was just joining in, yeah. Great.
So good.
Sunday's programme was really good. It was a weird one Sunday. Because the first show was a show called Lady Bracknell's Confinement, which was on at 10:15 in the morning.
Oh, wow.
At the Tom Thumb.
Uh-huh.
And I looked at Making Waves, again, because I was having a little bit of an anxiety time. I looked at Making Waves as, the way I could deal with it was, particularly because, you know, you weren't around, you were working.
I was working that whole weekend.
And I thought, I want to go to stuff, A, to support.
Yeah, of course.
People. And B, because, you know, it's good to go. If you've got the opportunity to go to stuff, I think you should go to stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So I looked at it almost like, and I don't mean this as an insult or anything, but I looked at it as going to work.
Yeah,
that's how I can deal with it sometimes. It's okay. Like, it's going to work. I'm actively.
You got to put your time in.
I put my time in. I punch in, punch out. I go to work. So I got up early Sunday morning, drove to the show. It was a rainy morning.
Yeah, it was horrible.
It was a rainy morning. It was a horrible morning, and. This is probably actually not a funny story. Quiet as anything on the roads. Tiny, you know, there's where I live in Minster, at the top of the hill, there's a big roundabout.
Mm-hmm.
I go over the roundabout. Straight over the roundabout. Yeah, straight over the roundabout. My anxiety is really bad. So it's really over the roundabout. Then there's another roundabout just after, and I go right at that roundabout. There's a series of three roundabouts. Go right, and there's this third little roundabout, and it takes me as if I'm going to go through Manston and whatnot. Get to this third roundabout, rainy day, and I do a mixture of, I think I put my clutch down at the wrong time, I change into gear, it's wet, there's a little gust of wind and whatnot. My car spins.
Oh, fucking hell.
I lose control of the car, and it spins, and there's no one else. I don't crash into anyone else. Yeah. There's no one else on the road, right? But I lose control of the car. Don't crash into the roundabout, like, because the car stalls and whatnot, but I fully spin.
Yeah.
And I'm, like, now facing the wrong way on a roundabout. And little anxious me is in the car going, oh, God, I'm going to be late to the show. And what do I do? So I get out, I have a look at the car, make sure it's fine, make sure a tyre hasn't burst.
Yeah, you know, of course, yeah.
Like that. And then I get the car started again, and I drive off, and I'm sort of feeling it. I feel it. I go, it feels fine.
Yeah.
I feel fine. I pull up in the Spitfire and Hurricane Museum, because it's not far.
Yeah, yeah. It's just again, down the road, isn't it? Yeah.
Park the car up, and I have a look round, look at everything, make sure there's no scratches, no bumps, no nothing. I go, okay. I think, well, I may as well go to the
show. Nothing wrong, really, apart from
And it's halfway through the show that, like, what has happened hits me.
Oh, my God.
And I'm, like, sat there going, oh, I could have died. You know, because the adrenaline's gone.
Yeah.
And I'm sat there going, you know, and a few people I know are coming in, you know, like some of the producers of the festival going, oh, hello, hello. I sit right at the back, mainly because I'm tall and I have a big head. Yeah, I don't want to be in front of people. And
very polite.
Very polite. Sitting there, and then, like, halfway through, I'm going,
Just start openly weeping.
Yeah. People turning around going, God, this show's got down, isn't it? And then afterwards, there was about half an hour gap in between that show and Reynard the Fox.
Yeah.
So I just had to go and sit in my car. I'm fine.
Yeah.
I'm fine. No, it's fine. And then go back in for a kid's show.
For a kid's show, yeah. That'll bring your anxiety right there, at least, I guess.
Yeah.
Some sort of bright colours and some puppetry.
That was really nice, though. Actually, Reynard the Fox was really nice.
Yeah.
It worked, and it worked well.
Cool. You know. Had it come on... Was there much that changed since the time we saw it in...
It was a bit snappier. Not in terms of overall content, most of the content was there.
Just a bit
slicker, a bit tighter, a bit more rehearsed, you know.
Nice. Well, I think the first time that we saw it, that was the first time it had ever been performed.
Yeah.
I don't think it had been performed in front of people before, barring
their
families and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, no, it was really nice. Good weekend. So.
Yeah, there was so much stuff going on. I'd be curious how... And obviously, you don't have to give the details exactly if you don't know. How successful was it in the grand scheme of things? Is there a quantifiable way to sort of say that in terms of... everything as that's
been seen. I would, as an outsider...
Yeah.
Most events, the events I went to, they all seem to have nice audiences.
That's really, really good.
Overall, it was, for the first year of something...
That's the thing, I'm dead chuffed.
Call it a success.
Dead chuffed.
And hopefully, there should be another one. I think enough of a success to go, oh yeah, we could do this.
We'll do that,
I hope they do, because, again, it's good for the area. It's
definitely good for the area. Oh no, I'm dead chuffed. I'm dead chuffed.
Well, I wondered, because it is like Mental Health Awareness Month or week. I wondered if that's a thing we should talk about.
Okay.
I don't know if that's too serious for
hashtag comedy podcast.
But I wondered if... Would you say you suffer from any form of mental health?
No, not really. I think I've definitely got more anxiety now than I ever had when I was younger.
Yeah.
Most definitely. Do I have an anxiety disorder? No.
Mm.
No, definitely not. But I think everyone suffers from, whether they admit it to themselves or not, I think everyone suffers from some sort of mental health issue.
Yeah.
And I think it's much better. I think we're great. I think we're just slightly over the hump for it. I think it's becoming much easier for people younger than us to have that discussion now.
Yeah.
And talk about it in a much more open and honest way.
Yeah.
And it winds me up, the people who discount that, because they weren't allowed to talk about it when they were younger, so therefore it can't exist and you can't have an anxiety issue. You can't have an eating disorder. You can't have it. Just be happy. You can't have depression. Just be happy.
Yeah.
Really annoys me. Really, really winds me up. And I think we're a little bit over that, but I think the generations following us are going to have a much, much easier time of that. Yeah. Do I suffer from anxiety? Yes, sometimes. Do I have an anxiety disorder? No, probably not. I think it would be discounting the people who really do suffer from that and have a really terrible time to say I did.
Yeah.
Particularly as I've never been diagnosed with it, so I wouldn't ever say... I do. What about you? Do you suffer from anything?
I would say I suffer from anxiety mainly, particularly social anxiety.
Yeah.
Yeah, is a big one for me. Yeah, I struggle a lot with I often think people don't like me.
Yeah.
And I struggle sometimes to, and what happens as a result of that is, and I think this is because why I wanted to potentially do this was to make it kind of industry focused as well, and be like, do you feel that the industry has ever had a negative impact on your mental health?
Yeah. I would say so. For me, and I know, and it's difficult to say because obviously I've never really been in it in a professional capacity for a long extended period of time. The longest I've done in a professional stint is probably the 6 months leading up to Loop and Loop Festival. What I did suffer from was trying at 18, 19 to go through trying to jump through the hoops of trying to get into drama school and things like that.
Yeah.
That's when I started to really suffer from going, because what it makes you think you're not good enough a lot of the time.
And it's, that's fucking horrible, isn't
it's
it?
It's horrendous, that's, yeah.
A,
And it's the only industry, and we've talked about it kind of in a humorous way before. It's the one that it's the most terrifying thing I do, and I keep going back to it.
You know? Yeah.
And it's difficult because there's so many mini successes, but what feel like enormous failures.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? There's a lot of small wins.
Yeah.
And the small wins, and they're probably bigger wins than I'm thinking they are, but there are, and there are definitely wins, but it's those losses and those times that it's not happening the way you thought it might, those feel a lot more colossal and a lot more, they feel like they put a lot more pressure on you than those little wins, and they don't always, the scales aren't always tipped in an equilibrium.
Yeah. Have you ever had a colossal, like an audition or interview, like a, oh, that didn't go well?
So my interview for Bristol for the Old Vic when I did that was just an absolute shit show. just my prep. It had been probably, I think the problem with that, it was the last one of the run that I'd done that year. It had been about a month, I think, probably since my one before that. And I just didn't put the prep in. And I just didn't, you know, I didn't practice up enough before going there and things like that. And it's just, I just walked out going, well, fuck. That was an absolute travesty. Yeah. And it comes from being from a small town like this, where we'd always been involved in productions of some form.
Yeah.
Particularly you and me being at theatre ball and things like that. Comes from being quite a significant player, sounds wrong, but I guess when I was a kid, I definitely felt like that. Looking back on it, I realise that's probably not the case, but feeling like I was a big deal, going to a place where every fucker thinks that, and you suddenly go, oh, I was just a bigger fish in a small pond. Looking back, I realised I wasn't that at the time, but that's definitely how I perceived myself.
And I tied
my self-worth to it a little bit.
Yeah.
And when I got rejected by every drama school I auditioned for, I was like, oh, fuck, it's over.
I had the same thing. You had that, you know, big fish in a small pond thing, and you turn up. I remember my first RADA audition, turning up and sucking.
Yeah.
And I remember going downstairs to my mum thinking, oh, that didn't go great, but, you know, probably get through the first round and then I can sort it out in the second round.
Yeah.
And you think, and, you know, and then getting the letter going, oh, that hurt.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the thing. The one where, because then after that, my mentality changed a little bit and I realised, okay, this is not a given.
Yeah.
At all. And I remember trying again at RADA and I remember turning up and the guy on the panel had my application form in front of him. And he goes, so where did you go to school? And I went to Ursuline. And I say it, Ursuline, because that's how everyone else says Ursuline.
Yeah.
That's the accent around here.
Yeah.
And he looked up at me and went, so it's Ursuline? I went, yes. And as soon as I said yes, I realised what he was actually asking me, which was he wanted me to go, no, it's Ursuline.
Yeah.
And to pronounce it like that.
Right.
And as soon as I said yes, he went, huh. And went back down. And I realised, it was that split second I realised, I went, doesn't matter what I do now.
Yeah.
You think I'm a fucking pleb.
Yeah.
This is it. Gone.
And it's bad how those snapshot. Yeah, the industry's weird. And I think it's a real minefield that you have to navigate. And it's like a minefield, and there's no, that's the thing with the minefield. You don't know where they are, I guess.
Yeah.
I was going to say it's a minefield and you don't have a map pinpointing showing you where they are. A minefield, you know. I'm going home. I am home. You know, it's difficult to navigate, and there are so many times you get knocked back, and I guess it's the continuing to want to do it is the drive. I don't know. It's funny. In no other job would you be shut down so wonderfully. Would you continue to go back and try that thing?
Give it a crack.
And give it a crack. And those processes, I think, are, of course, you do have to do those because you have to weed out who you think has the best potential, who you can think you can manage through that. But it never feels like they're weighing up your potential. It always feels like they're attacking your character.
And it's
because of how, in this industry, how closely you tie yourself. Your ability is your defining feature sometimes.
Yeah.
And it's how closely those two things are tied.
And it fucks up your It actually does sometimes fuck up your ability to make connections with other people, particularly within the industry as well, because you're always... I sometimes have to really check myself, and because I get annoyed at people sometimes, irrationally, and then I have to really check myself and go, am I getting annoyed at them because I'm genuinely annoyed at them? Am I getting annoyed because I'm perceiving them to be either a competitor or better or trying to manipulate a thing to stop me getting a thing? And you have to really check yourself, because sometimes you get, you know, I'll go through moments, particularly if my anxiety is particularly bad, I'll go through moments where, like, I really question my friendships.
Yeah.
And go, are you actually a friend of mine? Or is this a...
Am I riding your coattails?
Or are you... Are we friends, or is it just a convenience for you? Because you'll know I'll either do what you want me to do or whatnot. And it's... That can be really poison.
Yeah.
Sometimes, because you're sat there going, I don't even know who's my friend.
Yeah.
And then I go through periods where I go, fuck it, I don't need people. You know, you're all commodities. I don't, you know, and I'll look at it that way. And then you go, but then that you feel really empty, and you go, oh no, shit, I'd quite like, you know,
quite like some mates.
You know.
And I think the thing with that is you know, you have to have people outside. I think you have to have people outside the industry to kind of not even double check you sometimes, just to be like, I can go over here and I don't have to worry about it, and I don't have to think about it, and it's a nothing thing.
It's such a...
Which is weird again, right? Which is weird. You shouldn't have to... Well, no, but I guess you do have to treat it like that as well, because you don't... You wouldn't go to a 9-to-5. Let's say you work at an office, you do data entry at 9-to-5. Yeah. You don't then go and hang out with... Some people do, but you don't just go and hang out with all the other data entry people every single day, and that's all you do, and all you talk about is your data entry, and you go out on the weekends with your data entry mates, and you hang out with, and you go on holiday with those people.
Yeah.
And of course that does happen sometimes, but I think the chances are you probably have other people outside of that industry.
Because how are you in networking? How do you find networking? Because I fucking hate it. I hate it.
It depends. I don't like networking in the umbrella term that it's, because I think you say networking, people immediately think it's this seedy, underhanded, I'm going to go into this room and how am I going to leave with the best connections that I can make?
Yeah.
I think that's really, really odd. I find that a difficult thing to get on with. If we're talking about a thing where we just go and there's a little bit of a party and there's other industry people there and you might be able to make connections a bit more loosely, I think that's okay. I can deal with that level of networking.
Yeah.
I want to be able to be the person who goes in and goes, right, I know I need to go and speak to X producer, Y director, Z writer, and snaffle up all their details and make sure that when they leave that night, they're going to think about me for their next thing, potentially. I'd like to be that person, but...
because I have the same...
Because that's how you... So you get the work sometimes.
Yeah.
It's, you know, there's a combination of merit and there's a combination of who you know.
Yeah.
There's those two things, and I think oftentimes I find that it's the who you know that is more.
Yeah, I had a moment where I went to that. I went to the Making Waves CPD day.
Yes,
which was brilliant. And one of the exercises that we had to do was a networking exercise. You know, and you're trying to have as many conversations with people as you can, and you've got a business card, and are you able to naturally get the card over to someone, and which I completely understood the point of the exercise, the merit of the exercise. I hated doing it because my natural kind of gut reaction is to go up to people and go, hello, I'm feeling really uncomfortable doing this. Are you feeling uncomfortable doing this too? Great, can we have a card? Can we have a thing? Because my thing is, if that makes you laugh, we might be able to have a thing.
Yeah.
But if it doesn't, then this is really fucking awkward.
Yeah.
And I also have a thing of, I don't know if you have this, I have a thing of, I hate small talk.
Yeah.
Because I'm often worried that I come across as insincere or not interested and whatnot, and to be honest, most of the times I'm not. But I don't, you know, I'd rather talk to you about the big thing.
Yeah.
If you've got a show, tell me about the show. Tell me about your process. Tell me about that. If you're going through a thing in your life, you tell me about the thing in your life and let's have a chat about it. Let's not talk about the weather.
Yeah.
Let's not even talk about Brexit. I don't want to have a chat about that. I'd rather have a chat about you.
Yeah.
You know, or about a thing. So I hate small talk. Yeah. So
what he says.
What he says.
If the mic didn't quite pick that out. I'm pretty sure a bloke from outside my house just went, fuck it. Thank you, comedy man.
Yeah, so I struggle with that.
Yeah, and that's kind of what those networking meetings can be sometimes, right?
But I'll be in a conversation with someone. So in that exercise, often I'll be in a conversation with someone and it'll be like, you know, 2-3 minutes, great, and off we go. And then, and I think, oh, that went okay. It felt a little bit awkward. And then I'll see them at, you know, at the corner of my eye. You know when you like see someone who you've just talked to and they're talking to someone else? And they are seemingly having the most wonderful conversation with that person. And you're going, no, fuck, it is me. It is clear, it's not a, it's not me, it's you. It's me. It's definitely, or it feels like it's me. And that's the you know, and that's the pressure I put on myself. And I go, this is awful.
Yeah. But the other, I guess the other thing you potentially got to look at is, are those people doing that exact thing that you just spoke about? And are they being good networking people? And being like, oh, it's wonderful to meet you. Oh, I love this thing. I love da-da-da-da. Is it that? Whereas, are they having a genuine connection? Or are they kind of being a little bit more underhanded with each other?
I don't know.
And I'm not necessarily even talking about that moment in particular. Yeah.
I don't even know, but you kind of go, oh, okay. Oh, right. Oh, okay. This is... Because I struggle with it, you know, realising that my part of the career is being able to network and, you know, to get projects off the ground as much as anything and find collaborators. And I don't think that's a unique thing to me. I think actually that's a thing that a lot of people probably do struggle with. But it's such a mindfuck.
Yeah. And it's difficult to navigate, isn't it? And it's because of those preconceived notions of, are you just meeting me because you want something out of me? Or are we actually just having a moment right now? Or are you just coming at me because you think you can get X, Y, Z out of me? And it's leaving those things going, oh, that was really nice. And then it's in those sad boy hours in the middle of the night when you're like, oh, no one actually really likes me. They just wanted me for my blah. And it's difficult to know who's being genuine in those instances, I think.
Yeah.
Just as much as it is difficult to come across as genuine.
Yeah.
I think it's difficult to know who is genuine in those moments as well.
Because I try to then really focus on, if I'm able to kind of really tune in and not be anxious about it, I will then try and focus on content.
Mm.
And I think that's the main thing sometimes to do, because if most about communication is actually your body language and how you say the thing, and the content is an important bit, but it's often actually the least important bit in kind of day-to-day things. I then try and focus a lot on the content of what people say. And I think I'm actually all right at telling when people don't know what they're talking about.
Oh, okay.
And that's a way I can sometimes sort of cipher. But then even I have a thing of going, am I actually really intelligent? Or have I been to university and I know some big words?
I know some buzzwords. Yeah.
I know some buzzwords, and I know some key bits that I can go, great, that's my shield.
Yeah.
Now, like, my education is my shield, and I can kind of back you off because I can go, fuck, here's a big word. And,
yeah.
And you can't talk to me anymore. Yeah. Fucking weird. Fucking absolutely.
It's tough because in no other, again, in no other industry do you have to schmooze people to get something done as much, you know. If you're in retail, you know, you're not having to go to retail networking meetings to kind of get to pick up interest in your thing. Yeah, it's such a weird, and again, I always found it weird calling it the industry, because I always feel like I've only ever really got my little toe in it sometimes.
I feel the same.
Yeah, I only ever feel like I'm just on the outside, and I really do. Part of me wants to be in it, but again, the anxiety part of me kind of just doesn't even want to. You know, you've got to go. You've just got to jump in with 2 feet sometimes, and that's far easier said than done. But yeah, so calling it, you know, saying the industry has done this to me almost feels a little bit disingenuous, because I've not done enough to really feel like I'm a big part of that, or it's a big part of my life.
I feel exactly the same. You know, sometimes you go, ah, yeah, and then you go, oh, yeah, but you haven't even.
Yeah.
I'm going through a period. I'm going through a real period where I'm reevaluating everything.
Yeah.
And I'm doing things that are poison. Again, it comes back to doing the things that are poison. I'm doing things like judging myself against people who are my peers and some who are, I would consider, but it's what you consider to be ahead and what you consider to be, you know, behind. Yeah. There are some people who are doing things that I go, that would be really cool, why am I not doing that?
Yeah.
And they, you know, and to be really blunt, that there are some people doing those things that actually at university I did better than. And
yeah.
You go, great, fine. And that can be really annoying. And then there are some people you go, okay, you're not doing a thing. But, and it's pitting yourself against people. It's really hard not to do.
It's so difficult not to match yourself up against other people's accomplishments. It's really, really hard to do. Because there are times where you do feel deserving of it, even though actually sometimes you're not necessarily deserving of it.
Yeah.
You know?
And I don't know if you find... We will stop soon because this probably is getting really depressing. But I thought it might just be an interesting thing to talk about. Do you suffer at all from imposter syndrome?
As in,
well, I'm particularly at things like, you know, if we go to a Flex or a TNT. The most anxiety I've ever had as a facilitator has been doing Flex.
Yeah, actually. When we presented it.
Yeah, or if I've been doing, because I suddenly can teach children. Fine, and I can teach teenagers, and I can even teach adults who aren't in the industry.
Mm.
And it's again because I'm comfortable enough within my own knowledge and my own skill set to know that I'm going to know the answer probably quicker than you do, and my experience warrants my position here as the leader. Doing a flex with people who are older, more experienced, different experience and whatnot, that feels very like, I feel like the kid who has snuck in and put the teacher's clothes on.
Yeah.
And suddenly, wow, you're teaching the class. Do you get that?
Yeah, I definitely do. Especially because I get it a lot, particularly because I don't have that shield of education that you were talking about. I really feel like, especially when we've been working together on stuff, I feel like, oh, fucking hell, I'm not worthy of this. I shouldn't be here. This is not for me.
Yeah.
Even though there's probably a reason that I've been given that opportunity or responsibility, it just makes me go. It makes me feel like it's because I know the people.
Yeah.
I've gotten this job almost through nepotism a little bit.
Yeah, I get. It's weird, isn't it?
So. Even though there's a reason we get asked to come back. Multiple times, and then we've been given things, you know, particularly with, let's not even talk about producing, because there's only been two instances of that for both of us, even just as performers.
Yeah,
there's a reason we've been working since we were 18.
Yeah,
but it still makes me go, particularly as new people have come here and have worked in that same job.
Yeah,
and I go, you're much better and far more suited to this than I am. And the reason I think I'm getting, and I feel like sometimes the reason I'm getting asked back a lot is just because I've done it for so long and you know me so well.
Each year I worry that the only reason Lisa Payne employs me for school tours is because my name is Darren, and D probably gets you quite high up on the on your phone contact list.
And you're scrolling through.
Darren can do it. Great, cool.
Yeah, it's difficult, and you know, and there probably is a reason we keep getting asked back, and we're probably selling ourselves a little bit short here. We are available for hire, by the way.
We really are. Like, we really are.
You know, there's probably reasons we keep coming back to work, but sometimes I feel like it's just because they know who we are and we've been doing it for so long now.
Although, on a slightly different note, I did my first saying no to a job.
Oh, really? What did you say no to? Or you'd have to say it on...
I'm not going to say what I
said. Okay, tell me off the... Tell me off mic.
I will tell you off mic, but I politely declined.
Interesting, okay.
Because I just felt, no, I can't do it.
How did that make you feel, though?
I felt... I had that immediate thing of... To be fair, there were some dates that were a bit...
Iffy
anyway. Sure. So it wasn't like I just totally... offhand rejected it, but I, you know, most likely it could have been made to work.
Mm.
But I went, no, I can't, I,
Can't bring yourself to do it.
Can't do it again. I had that immediate thing of money, 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 money. And then I had the, for the, you know, one of the first times the rest of, like, I suppose you're, to be really wanky, the artistic integrity went, no.
Mm.
No, we're not going to do it. We're not going to do that again. Because it would have made me miserable.
Yeah.
And if you're going to decide that you're going to spend your life kind of dicking about in silly costumes, doing silly voices, I think you should enjoy that.
Yeah.
And if you don't enjoy that, it kind of go and work in an office then.
Yeah.
You may as well, because you'll make more money and
yeah. You'll be fine. And your mental health will probably be a little bit better.
Better. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Felt so, but so there was that, and then it felt quite powerful.
Felt a bit liberating.
It felt a little bit liberating.
I totally get that. I totally get why that would be a thing. And it's odd, isn't it? There's an odd thing. It's like when you're not working a lot, and it's not like you've got a portfolio to maintain and upkeep. Yeah. You can say no, and then there's a period of time where actually you probably can't say no to stuff.
Yeah.
Because you need to maintain a certain level of, you know, notoriety.
Yeah.
And then I think when you get beyond that, I think there's a level where you can say no. I think we're still in the you can say no, but it wouldn't ever really affect your career in that way.
Yeah, and still, yeah, but even still to the point where you go, oh, you know, 90% of the time I will say yes if it's paid.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, and I understand that can sound awful, but
you've got to make that bread, you've got to get that bag.
And sometimes, but that's not even sometimes that the jobs are going to be bad. There's stuff that I've said to yes to primarily because it was paid and the money was, you know, worth my time that have been brilliant.
Yeah.
And that, you know,
I guess most of the, you know, because I guess generally speaking, you never. I don't think anyone sets out to make a bad thing as well, though, you know, and make a thing no one wants to enjoy. So, but it's just, you know, some jobs are bad and aren't as fun or as good as the others. And you're always going to compare it to other jobs that you've had for a similar pay and gone, oh, that thing I did for that, the same kind of money was so much better.
You know, I don't think this is a, you might say, if you think that I should cut this out, I absolutely will. But I still... the reason I do the street theatre when it's offered is because I find it very difficult.
Right, okay.
I actually find the street theatre a difficult gig to do. I don't ever feel particularly comfortable doing it. And it's a different anxiety to stand up.
Yeah.
But I do have the thing, it's different because at least there's three of you and you've got people that you can play with and you can follow if you want to. But there's still the thing of it's out in the street, it's in public and whatnot. But the reasons when it is offered, I will, and if the date is fine, I will always say yes, is because it's a day of work,
yeah.
It's money, and then the thing is I find it difficult, and I think if you find it difficult, you should keep doing it.
Yeah.
Because I would always want to get better at that thing.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. The things I find, there are some things that I don't find as difficult anymore. The dog walkers, for instance, I don't think that's as difficult as that once was, just because of we've done that now pretty much for 6 years. Not obviously every year for 6 years, but we've done that multiple times.
Yeah.
Probably nearing, it's got to be nearly 10 times we've probably had done that little performance now. The reason I keep going, the biggest reason I keep going back is because it is difficult, yes, but it's also one of my favourite things to do. I really enjoy doing the street theatre.
It is mine. And again, if the people who are listening, please understand how I mean this. In the pit of my stomach, I hate it up until about 20 minutes in if it's going well.
Yeah.
And then it's fine.
Yeah. I totally, totally get that. Because particularly when you're doing a new scenario, you never know how it's gonna be received until you start doing it.
Yeah.
And of course... And like any performance, I guess, really, there's the same kind of performance anxiety I get before I would do anything. It's that in the pit of my stomach until I get there and I'm doing it. And then when it's gone, I'm like, fuck, I can't believe that's gone. I can't believe that's a 6-7 hour day. And of course, actually, it's never really that long. It's probably only ever as long as six, isn't it? That day is gone.
Yeah.
And God, I wish I was doing it again tomorrow.
Yeah. Do you find during those days, actually, because I don't like taking breaks... I find I know physically you couldn't do it.
Yeah.
But after a, particularly if it's a longer break, I will A, feel rested, but then the anxiety will kick back in because I've stopped. And then you know you're going out and you're going out to new people. So it almost feels like starting again. So I'll go through a period of, in the morning, anxiety, 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 put the costume on, anxiety, 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 start, get into it, get into a little bit of flow. Then I don't want it to stop.
Yeah.
And then we go back in and it's like a, an athlete's kind of, you know, stop training and your muscles.
Yeah, your muscles, again, yeah, you go, yeah.
Oh. Do you get that or?
I don't ever, I can generally, I'll do it in that first period, but then I can, after lunch, I know what I'm going into.
Yeah.
Again, I kind of know. And because by that point, I kind of know that it works. If it wasn't working,
yeah.
And if it was something that was, you know, that wasn't going over quite as well as we'd hoped, or it's just a slightly different thing to what actually we'd hoped it might be, then I'd find that second run to be as anxiety-inducing as the first, that that morning shift compared to the afternoon or evening.
Do you find, this is only because I'm actually finding this conversation really interesting, and it's probably only interesting to us, but do you find...
one second, sorry. Go ahead.
Using the street theatre as a base example, because it's the thing we both do.
Yep.
And have done and have done together numerous times. Do you find a pressure, particularly when the scenarios are being put together, to contribute in order to make it feel like you've earned your place at the table?
Yeah, definitely. And that's been from the very first time we ever did it.
Yeah.
Feeling like I had to have some sort of input in it, because so otherwise I'm just there.
Yeah.
Which I know really is, if you were an actor in an out-and-out stage performance, you're, someone else is directing you, someone else is lighting you, you're generally reading someone else's words.
Yeah.
There wouldn't be that same sort of pressure. Maybe some character choices, but still, even then, your director is probably taking you through those anyway.
Yeah. I find my, you know, and I can pinpoint to sort of some scenarios that I've been the first one to, or first, the first iteration of to do that. Mm. So I know that there are scenarios that I've actively contributed to, and actually some that I've contributed quite a lot to.
Yeah.
But there's a, for some reason, I find particularly in those days, and actually I think it's to do with, I probably don't like a devising process.
Yeah.
Primarily, I prefer a written, let's work with a script.
Because that's what the street theatre generally is. Yeah. Like you're...
Or completely improv.
Yeah.
The flip side, but that, working it together, and there's something about that I find my improv, it's like my improv brain, even performing it sometimes actually, my improv brain just takes a day off. When it's the day I really need it.
Yeah, when it actually is, like, sometimes, you know, it's the best time to kick in.
Bantering with people, and sometimes you go, I have a little bit of, one reason of that is often a little bit of like almost, it sounds really wanky, a little bit of awe for whoever is like the lead player in that game, because that, you know, the person who is, whichever scenario it is often the lead, you feel, A, you are following anyway, literally you are following them.
Literally, yeah.
And they are calling most of the shots in terms of where you stop and doing things. Yeah, and you always, I always feel like I'm trying to play someone else's tune.
Mm.
And I never feel like I quite crack the thing. I don't know, do you ever get, that was just rambling.
No, I know what you mean though, because yeah, you want to, especially sometimes when you're working with, you know, when we're both not in there, the other two, you know, mainstays in the street theatre team, because they are so confident when they are doing it, and they're both so strong, you do almost feel like a...
I feel like a pleb sometimes. Yeah. I feel like an utter...
But what I think pleb. what I think is important in those instances, and we've talked about this before, is we're not the top goal scorers in that.
We're midfielders.
What we're doing is we're putting the ball into position so that can be those people can score goals, and I think that's just as important, or can be just as important as those goal scorers.
Yeah.
To another analogy.
That's how I justify. Because sometimes there'll be days, and it's not even just that. You know, if you're working on anything in a devising process or. Even meetings, actually, there'll be times where I go, I haven't said much.
Yeah.
Or I haven't done much. I haven't contributed.
Yeah, it's tough, isn't it? I know I was at, so when I was doing like the debrief and stuff for Roundabout with all the Newington people, yeah, being in that meeting and not really saying a lot because I didn't have a big hand in the overall process, yeah, right? I had a very, you know, I kind of had 3 hours worth of content in a program that was, yeah, 30 hours of programming.
Yeah.
You know, I had a very, very small percentage, only even 1%. But you're sat there going, I should say something. And what you end up doing, what can happen sometimes is you say something without saying anything at all. Mm. And you just say something. And I can be really guilty of that. I know what I'm like. Sometimes I'm guilty of sometimes is reframing a statement or a question in a different way to make it sound like a new idea. I can be really, I almost sometimes feel like that.
Yeah.
I feel like I've actually kind of just said what you've said, but I've said it in a slightly different way, so it sounds like a new,
yeah,
thought. And I know I'm guilty of that. I definitely am guilty of doing it in the past, and I'm trying to get better at not doing that, because it's not contributing anything. I'm just slightly changing what someone else has just said and framing it in a new way to make it sound like a new idea.
And going off of that, do you ever find... This almost brings it back to like the networking thing and whatnot, and I don't know if this is... I think this is actually... This is probably applicable to every field,
yeah,
actually. If you're in a like an open discussion, whether it's like a workshop and it's being opened up to things, or whatever that might be, or a meeting of some description where you're talking about something specific, do you ever find... I get annoyed sometimes because I do sometimes think those things can descend into intellectual pissing contests.
They absolutely can.
Where everyone feels like they've got to say the thing that is the smartest thing. And it's... That does two things to me. It very much depends in the mood I'm in.
Yeah.
I will either join the intellectual pissing contest and try and then make it a game and try and win it.
Yeah.
You can't fucking win it. You can't. Or I just go, I'm out, I don't want to play.
Yeah.
How do those things make you
feel? It's difficult because what annoys me sometimes with those things as well is you'll... I know I'm better at this now than I was years ago. That whoever brings up an idea, you give that person the credit. Even though I just said sometimes I'll reframe it and make it sound like a new thought. If it's a thought that opens up, or if something normally we come back to, I try and be like, if X person, X person said, why don't we, isn't that a thing we should consider? Oh, Z person, that was Z person's idea.
Mm.
That was a really good idea. Let's talk about that a bit more. And I find that there are, like you say, in those networking scenarios, sometimes there is the ideas are just out there and they're being thrown about and bandied about.
Yeah.
And then someone else will say it and it will be taken up, but the credit will never come back to where it's due. And I think that happens a lot. And that annoys me. I don't like that. That frustrates me a lot. And I don't even really want, it's not even necessary for me sometimes. I'm not really looking for the credit in a sense. But I would like a little bit of acknowledgement, particularly if that is the jumping off point that springboards you into a new idea and a new thing.
Yeah.
Which is great, but acknowledge where the idea came from. Yeah. Where it lived and how it breathed.
Oh, that's the most... Yeah, because that is the most annoying thing in a meeting where you've gone... But I, you know, you said,
yeah,
but I said that.
Yeah, and you don't want to turn around and say that because it makes you look like a twat. Like, yeah.
Yeah,
it makes you look like an absolute
bellend. It makes you feel like, yeah, you're going for attention. Like, hey, yeah, it was me. But I have a big problem. Yeah, so I have a big problem with that. I also have a big problem. This has happened very, very infrequently, but it really irritates me. And again, I have to check myself because I have to check myself and go, why am I irritated by this?
Yeah.
There has been situations where I've, particularly if it's to do with like sharing work, where we're discussing, and I have said a thing, and rightly or wrongly, the person who I've directed that to has not seen what I'm trying to say, or has thought it's not a particularly valid point, or has just argued against the point, right? Which is obviously, if they're sharing the work, it's totally their prerogative. And then someone else in the room will raise a little bit of the same point, and because they're either... seem to be of senior
authority.
Yep. The person who argued against me for making the same point goes, "Oh no, that's really interesting."
Yeah,
I take that quite personally.
I think you're well within your right to tell that personally though, because that's some bullshit. you know, that's a really underhanded thing to do. Because it comes back to those people who are going into those networking meetings, wanking everyone off they can find. Do you know what I mean?
I see that. It's almost so, you kind of go, this is sycophancy now. This is.
Yeah. You're just.
I go, and it's part where I go, I'll be over here, and we can talk about things properly.
Or we can
wank each other off.
Yeah.
And I don't want to do that. No. I don't want to wank anyone off today.
Not today. No. And if I'm going to, I'd sooner do it in the privacy of my own bedroom than in front of 20 people. Yes.
Anything else that irritate you? This is what this has become now. Anything else irritate you?
No, but I think it all. What I think we're talking about is I think all of these things contribute to those feeling of imposter syndrome, those feelings of anxiety that wanting to work and desiring to work in this industry can do. It makes you, because it can make you bitter. That's what it does. It makes you a bit bitter, and it makes you go, "What is the fucking point? What is the point of me even trying sometimes? Because sometimes I'm not getting the credit, or it's not paying off the way I want it to. Or even if it does pay off, I feel like I shouldn't be here." That's the irony, of course, isn't it? If you got the credit, if the idea was yours, if you got the credit, you then executed and delivered that thing, you would still go, "Oh, I shouldn't be here." Do you know what I mean? Even if all those things fell into place as you would want them to, individually, those steps that make a project become a reality, it would still make you go, but now I shouldn't be here," even though you've contributed, sinned through, executed that, and then you just go, I still shouldn't be here. And it does. It's weird how this industry does that to you, how it can make you feel like that.
Because if I had my way, there'll be a day where I am artistic director of the National Theatre, and I'll be sat in my offices going, "And we'll do this show for these many months, and you can direct that, and everyone go, darling, you go do your things, go do your things. Why am I here? I don't deserve this. Someone's going to come and go, you've misled everyone, haven't you?
You bastard.
Back to you, theatre with
me. Back to participation. Crikey. Oh, well, that's probably a good place to end, isn't it?
All the irritation.
No, I think it's a good discussion to have. You've got to talk about these things. And that's
I think so. Especially in the times we're in, we should, you know, everyone should be opening up and actually going. These are the things. It's not even about discussing things like, you know, things like mental health. I think actually it can be really to go, "This really fucking irritates me."
Yeah. And I think we shouldn't be afraid of being at, sometimes it's weird because we shouldn't be afraid of telling our peers that wasn't a nice thing you did, or that wasn't a good thing you did.
Right. Okay. This will be the final thing. Now, do you have... Sometimes I want to do that, and the thing that stops me is going, if I say it, you won't employ me anymore, or you won't consider employing me,
absolutely,
or you won't do...
Absolutely.
And I think, at its worst, that is why some people miss... And I'm not saying anyone ever has done.
Yeah.
I'm not even casting any aspersions. But if you were to take that 5 or 6 steps on,
that's
how people abuse their power.
Yeah.
Because it's people below, or seeming below, or consider themselves to be a below, who go, "Well, I can't say anything because my career was..."
Yeah.
And you're right. We should. If you consider something to be bullshit and you've considered it from all sides and whatnot, you should be able to speak out.
You should be able to. But yeah, the fear is, "Oh, if I say that, I'm not gonna work anymore." And my fear is never actually the people. I think probably we could say it to the people who employ us, and that wouldn't affect our being employed. What it might do is, if other people see that, it's those other people who don't know us as well who we might never get work from.
Yeah.
You know, in the future, if they were considering casting out a net to hire some people from around here.
There have been things where, you know, things I've worked on where someone has, you know, the worst of it, where someone has said a thing to me, and not even because it was the wrong thing to say, but they just said it. They said it in a way that just wasn't nice.
Yeah.
It wasn't polite. It wasn't necessary. It wasn't needed. And I have quelled that by going, "No, be a good soldier. Be a good soldier today. Do it for everyone else." When actually what I should have gone, "No, that what you've just said to me was spiky."
Yeah.
And it wasn't needed and it wasn't necessary.
Yep.
And it was, you've made me feel like shite.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be here anymore.
Yeah.
But I'm... pushing myself through because it's for, you know, it's for everyone else's benefit.
Yeah.
And I think we need to be able to do that because also, I probably know, I've done that.
Yeah.
And
of course, yeah, we're all guilty. We're all guilty of the things that annoy us.
To do it to me. You know?
Yeah. We should be able to be open and honest with everyone, you know, with everything that happens. And it's difficult.
It is difficult.
It's just fucking, you know, I said it earlier, it's a minefield. It's so tough to navigate. Yeah. You know, and when you think you've finally marked out some of the things that are going to blow you up, there's a whole host of new things that have landed in front of you.
It comes down to largely, it's all about navigating. It's all about navigating people.
Yeah,
that's largely what it's about. It's trying to get a thing done and knowing that, you know. And I'm someone who is sometimes, you know, I'm sometimes very reluctant to collaborate with people because I will feel, you know, in wanky terms, it will kind of corrupt my artistic vision. But you know, and then you have to accept, though, that you need other people to get stuff done.
To get shit done, yeah. That's the thing, right?
You know, and it's all about navigating that, understanding that people communicate in different ways, and being really clear about that, and being nice. And I think that's a big one.
Yeah.
That's a big one for me. And I'm not always meaning big smiles and ha-ha-ha, how are you? But just basic kind of...
decency,
basic manners and courtesy. Don't need to be best friends, but
let's just be decent to one another.
Yeah, you know, particularly if you're working with people, be nice to them. Don't just for the fact that you might be familiar with them doesn't excuse a lack of manners. I don't think.
No.
And again, I'm saying that as someone who's probably done it as lack manners, but I think we've all got to be. Within not just within this industry, but every industry, but because this is the one that we are interested in and talking about, I think we've got to be better.
Yeah.
And I think if everyone's a bit better and we go, you know, and I hate the excuse, oh, that's just the industry.
Yeah.
It doesn't always have to be.
Doesn't have to be. It can change.
Being rude to people, being nasty and manipulative or whatnot is not an excuse. It does not excuse... There's no excuse for that. An industry is not an excuse for that behaviour.
Yeah.
You know.
A way thing was does not mean that it has to continue that same way.
No.
What was does not have to be what is. What is. What it follows.
Yeah. Comes down to like the protest thing, right?
Yeah.
It comes down to if we're not, you know, the planet is
dying.
Is dying. We don't just go, well, that's the way it is.
Yeah.
Some people are. That's the reason why they're a protest.
Yeah. But,
you know, a lot of people have gone, no.
Yep.
This has been quite an angry.
It's been quite cathartic, though. It's quite a nice bit of catharsis.
I feel really great. People listening won't, but I feel wonderful.
Well, it might open up discussions in some people's lives that they were afraid to have, or it might give some people... comfort, you know, because I don't know. I think we probably have some younger people listen to this. It might give some of those people the opportunity to go, oh, well, if they're feeling like that 10 years on for me,
I'm feeling like this now,
you know, that feeling isn't... I'm not saying that, not saying that's good necessarily, actually, of course, but, you know, there are coping methods.
If you know, saying it is part of...
Talking about it is the thing.
Yeah. Or we're going to go to a next networking thing together, and if anyone's listening, they go, oh, those two boys are very bitter and very angry. And are they angry at me? I don't know. Are they? What?
Or we'll go, and if anyone ever sees us who's listened to this, us talking about how we don't like to be really unhanded, what we do is we're up to them like, hi, how are you? Nice to meet you. And we're like, oh, they're liars.
And within 6 months, we'll be doing an episode going, that's all the dried up for you. Yeah, the work's dried up.
Yeah, it's
me,
really, really, really weird.
I don't know why.
But I've got all these business cards I didn't want.
It's just reminding me of the planet's dying. And I don't know how to deal with it. Well, on that
bombshell. Follow us on Instagram. @Fools_Folly. Send us an email.
Follow us on Facebook now, you can find us.
Hey, yeah, we're on Facebook now. We should probably post some stuff on there. Just Fools Folly on Facebook. Email us, foolsfollytheatre@gmail.com. Got any questions, queries?
On Twitter, we are @WeAreYourFools.
Yep. I'd really like to do, at some point, if we ever get because obviously, we, you know, it's kind of a running joke of ours. We have a really small but very dedicated listenership. What I'd love to do at some point is actually have a section on here where we do take some questions from people and discuss them. I think, because I think that'd be a really nice thing to do, a bit of interactivity.
Yeah, it'd be really nice.
And talk about, particularly when we have guests as well.
Yeah.
Questions.
Which
that,
we will get back to.
We will get back to having guests. Yeah. We definitely will. But for both those things, you know, questions for guests, which I think we're potentially going to have as a Patreon tier. If like for a couple of quid, if you really have a burning question for some artists,
yeah,
we're going to have a thing on there where you'll definitely get it read. We might, there'll be, you know, you might be able to chance it, but there'll be the opportunity to definitely have it read out if you pay a certain level on Patreon, if we ever get around to doing that.
Yeah, it's practically there. It's practically
pretty much, yeah. But yeah, I'd like to start doing that because I think that's a really interesting thing, because it's going to give us, you know, some... even though we've clearly never run out of content.
We might get some angry emails now.
We might do, yeah. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
And some P45s for our employers.
This was about it, because everyone is my fucking boss. I am no one's boss.
Yeah, I am no one's boss.
Everyone's my boss.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. But yeah, thanks. Whenever you're listening, good morning, good evening, good afternoon, good night. From us, Colin Maud.
Darren Hill. Bye, friends.
Bye.